From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
This week's episode of PDGA Radio is brought to you by the letter J and the number 10. J for Jeff and Jacob, the winners of the Amateur World Doubles Championships. And the number 10 for the number of birdies Paul McBeth got in a row as he won the Jonesboro Open. We're going to talk about that today on PDGA Radio. I would like to bring in my co-host, Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, did you enjoy my cheesy intro?
Yes,
but very Sesame Street.
I was a little bit worried that the number 10 was about the number of strokes that I took on hole 16 the third round.
I'm not that mean. I'm not that mean.
I was like, dang, all right. Let's see what
that would have been pretty savage. No, I will not do that. But hey, I think we will talk more about Jonesboro later. We'll talk a little bit about AM World's doubles. And, you know, I know you had a little bit of a harrowing experience during the final round, and we'll relive it all today, Sarah.
Perfect.
We're going to relive all of it.
I'm still PTSD-ing quite a bit, but that's how you get past things, right? You just talk about them.
Yeah, we'll have a little bit of therapy session today on the show.
Great.
Before we get into that, though, I want to give a little plug. Also on the show today, obviously, I should mention who else we're going to have on the show. Some guy, Paul McBeth. He's going to join us later after his quite impressive performance this weekend. And then Nate Heinold, Pro Worlds TD, is going to join us later. We've got Pro Worlds registration opening later this week, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. Lots of big events coming up, Sarah. One of them being the Dynamic Disc Glassblown Open, which is next Wednesday through Saturday out in Emporia, Kansas. It is the second event on the PGA National Tour. I am very excited for that one. Want to give a little plug. We're going to have Smashbox Live there for all four rounds.
Awesome.
Both MPO and FPO.
Woohoo!
So all the live disc golf that you can handle next week over on Smashbox. Then we're going to have Jomez there for MPO1, FPO1, and MPO2. Then we're going to have Parsave Productions there for FPO2 and Dynamic Disc doing MPO3. Plus, we'll have recaps on the PDGA YouTube channel and all that good stuff.
Awesome.
So lots coming. And Sarah, extra bonus that I just found out today. We're going to give away a basket to a PDGA Radio listener.
Yeah.
And here's how we're going to do that. So next week, before the opening ceremonies of the GBO, and this is something they do every year. They do the pro panel. It's the GBO pro panel. It's a Q&A presented by the PDGA. And so basically what it is people submit questions and, they, you know, get to ask a panel of six players. So right now, the players on that panel are going to be world champion Greg Barsby, defending GBO champ Evil McMahon, former GBO champ Paul McBeth, Zach Melton, James Conrad, and also world champion Paige Bierkus. I shouldn't say it like that. Also world champion. How about women's world champion Paige Bierkus?
There you go.
She is not an also world champion. She's very much a world champion and hometown hero there in Emporia.
That's right.
So they're going to be on the panel. And basically, so without my rambling, here's what we're going to do. I want our listeners to think about some questions or a question that they could ask that might be good, you know, kind of an across the board question that would be good for all those players to answer. And I would like you to submit your question to radio@pdga.com. And Sarah and I are going to go through the questions and we're going to pick one of them. And next week during the pro panel, I'm going to get up there on stage. I think it's going to be streaming on Smashbox. So we'll put out some links for that. I'm going to get up there on stage and whoever's question I read, the fine folks at Dynamic Discs are going to take a basket. It's actually a DGA basket. So we've got kind of a cross promotional thing. Thank you, Dynamic. Thank you, DGA, for both being great national tour partners. The folks at DD, they said, hey, you pick a question, give it to one of your listeners, and we will slap a sticker on it and ship it to them for you.
Awesome.
So they totally rock. And it's a good chance for us to thank the listeners and also, you know, maybe get a couple more listeners involved in the process. So radio@pdga.com, if you want to put, you know, pro panel or something like that in the subject line so it'll get to us. Sarah and I will go over the questions. We'll pick a winner.
Question,
is that sound good to you, Sarah?
Question about the questions. Is it anonymous or will names be attached to these questions?
No, I mean, we kind of need a name so we can know who to send it to.
But
and
we
say,
could,
hey, Joe Schmo, you're the winner of the pro panel question.
That's true.
I want to recognize our listeners.
Oh, I know. I'm just trying to figure out a way for it to be anonymous so that I don't pick one of my besties or something out there.
Oh,
I don't know.
You're just gonna have to put your impartial hat on.
I have a question for that panel. Just hearing who was on the panel,
I want to know. You have a lot of baskets.
What?
You have enough baskets already.
I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna submit this question. I'm just saying, if I were to submit this question, I want to know what conditioner all of them use. We've got James Conrad, Paige Bjerkus, Zach Melton, and Eagles got some pretty fly hairstyle as well.
That is a pretty good question.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that question.
All right. I'd like to know.
All right. So anyway, radio@pdga.com for your PDGA pro panel questions. Thank you again to Dynamic Discs and DGA. One of you listeners is going to get a new basket.
Yay.
That's pretty sweet.
That's
so
super exciting.
Good stuff. Amworld Doubles was over the weekend. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, congratulations to Jeff and Jacob. Jeff Plaisance and Jacob Horning. They won the tournament and they are amateur world double champions. And it sounds like, Sarah, it got a little hairy out there in Texas this weekend,
to say the least. If you the news article just came out on PDGA today, and if you look at the Doppler radar, it looks crazy. So it looks like
just
they had
a couple lightning bolts here and there.
So basically they had to move. They played rounds 1 and 2 as scheduled on Friday. They were supposed to play rounds 3 and 4 Saturday. They got through round 3 and had to move round 4 to Sunday, and then canceled
the final 9, right? Yeah.
Right. So I guess with all of that moving around, it seemed like, was it the Pulsars? The Pulsars, yeah. They were 3 strokes ahead.
You think they were actually throwing Pulsars?
I really hope so.
I feel like if you're going to name yourself the Pulsars, you have to. Either that, yeah, or they're driving Pulsars.
Maybe. So that's that was Andrew Brown and Brandon Malachek.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay. So they were 3 strokes ahead and made some mistakes, and it looks like they made enough mistakes that the other team caught them, and they had to go into a sudden death playoff.
Yeah, and so they played a 3-hole loop for the playoff, took 4 holes to decide, and I think Jeff and Jacob tapped in for like eagle.
Oh, nice.
On the final hole. This is kind of a fun event. It's a little harder to track sometimes because it's a little bit, the format kind of spreads it all around, and the course is really large and stuff like that. But either way, pretty cool that they at least got to finish it. I know the weather at these Midwestern events in springtime are just very unpredictable. But either way, they got to finish it. And congrats to Jeff and Jacob.
Yeah.
Very excited for them. And also just a nice, easy team name to remember, I think.
Straightforward. Jeff and Jacob.
How do you think they decided who got to go first?
I don't know, because it's not in alphabetical order, which is what
I
would want.
Right? It's not in alphabetical order by first or last name.
I think it has a better ring to it, Jeff and Jacob. Like putting the second syllable name second, I think always has a good ring to it. Mm-hmm. I want to know, like, where do they go from here? Like, now they're AmWorld Doubles champions. Yeah. I want to know if they're regular doubles partners. Like, if, because you know how sometimes you've got that like one dude or girl who's like your go-to partner.
I would hope they're regular doubles partners if they went to this like PDJ major together.
Yeah. Because it's just like the mixed doubles that they have at Pro Worlds. We've seen Paige Pierce and Big Germ.
These dudes got to be super homies. Because look. Yeah, number one, their rating's 1 point apart. I figured out why Jeff got to go first. Jeff has the higher rating by 1 point.
Oh, yes,
but PDGA numbers are like 2 numbers apart.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
So they like signed up right around the same time too. Huh. So I think
there's got to be some story there.
I think they're in it for the long haul.
Maybe they're related. Maybe it's like a brother-in-law or something.
Maybe. We'll have to do some research. We'll see if we can track them down for next week's show.
Yeah.
Also, I want to talk to Extra Mayo, who was on the 5th place team.
Extra Mayo. Is that extra his name? Oh, I see that.
Person's name. Huh. Extra Mayo.
Do you think he orders extra mayo on all of his sandwiches?
I hope not.
Yeah.
Sounds terrible.
Oh, well, I also want to do a shout out to the advanced women's division. That was Mary Lippa and Amber Horsley. And they won by a pretty substantial amount, almost 30 strokes, 29 wow. strokes. Yeah. So congratulations to them.
Yeah. Exciting to have another major under our belts. I think, do we take a little while off for some majors now? We had like collegiates and then Amworld's doubles, like bang, bang.
Yeah.
And now, what's our next major?
Then we go for
USAMS. I think it's USAMS. Amateurs, which is in June. And then Amworlds, I think, after that. Oh, no, it's European Open, then Amworlds.
Then US Masters.
Then US Masters. Yep.
Oh, there's a lot of
I think you're just pulling them up as they come up on the website.
But
we split them up into world championships.
Yeah, you're right.
But what it is, I believe the order of it goes USAMS in June, European Open in July, then Amworlds right after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, gosh, I can't remember. Pro Worlds is in August.
Yep.
Masters World, I think, is in No, Masters Worlds might be in June, actually. But I'm thinking about it. Masters World is in June, so rewind what I said and plug Masters Worlds in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, lots of majors coming up. It's gonna be exciting. So it'll go USAMS, Masters Worlds, European Open, AM Worlds, Pro Worlds. And everything from there. So
yeah,
I think I got that right. Good stuff. And if we're talking about European Open, that's a quick opening for me to mention that the Euro Tour starts this weekend with the Dutch Open. And we'll have a little bit of coverage on that on the PDGA website. Our guy, Alex Williamson, is going to play it and write about it from overseas. So that'll be fun. And then, Sarah, you also mentioned an event going on a little closer to you this weekend.
Yeah, the Bowling Green Amateur Championship. Well, actually, they're calling it the Amateur Championships at Bowling Green in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Is happening this weekend, the 18th through the 20th. I believe that's 2 days from now. So Thursday through Saturday. Yeah, Easter weekend.
Very
and
nice.
There's 723 players signed up. They're playing, I'm not even going to list it, but all the big courses that you would know in Bowling Green.
Is there an Easter egg hunt involved? Because if there's no Easter egg hunt involved, I'm out.
I don't know. I won't be there this year. Actually, I've never played this event before, but I've gone a few times to go see some friends that were playing. But yeah, they're playing. My favorite course up there is White's Park. It's kind of a big bomber course. And then there's Lover's Lane, Hobson Grove, Kariakis. So all the regulars up there. But yeah, we've got 18 women signed up in the advanced division. Quite a few names that I recognize. Shout out to Kim Householder. Yeah, lots
very
going
cool.
on. And I think lots of the pros are going there, if not already there.
Yeah, a lot of them go
there.
And shake hands and kiss babies.
Yeah, I know Will and Latricia Shoestrick are already up there vending and promoting for Prodigy, and lots of other pros, I'm sure, will be going up that way as well. So it's pretty
this
cool.
This is where I proposed that we do the scene of the Paul versus Ricky battle, because then you have a whole crowd of amateurs on hand who want to watch that.
That would be cool. I'd drive an hour to see that.
It would be cool. Thank you. These are my free ideas that everybody can have.
We need to start writing them down. We have tons of good ideas.
I'm pretty sure I've talked about this one on the show before.
What? Just a head-to-head battle?
Yeah, it was when they did that Tiger and Phil golf thing. And then we talked about Paul and Ricky. This golf thing.
We'll make it happen, dude.
I'm only one person, Sarah. I'm not as powerful as the platform of PDGA Radio would make you think.
All right. Maybe
we'll see
someday.
What I can do. Maybe I know, someday. Right? Exactly. All right, Sarah. Let's take a break, and let's chat with Mr. Paul Macbeth, and then we'll come back, and we will talk about Jonesboro a little more. Does that sound good?
Sure.
All right, so we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio. Joining the show now is Jonesboro Open champion and about to be all-time PDGA career winnings leader, Paul McBeth. Paul, thanks for taking some time out. I know you're traveling still, but first let's talk about, before we get into Jonesboro over the weekend, it hasn't gone quite official yet, but once all the TD reporting stuff comes through, you'll be the top money earner of all time for PDGA events. You know, how did you know? Did you know you were kind of on the cusp of that? Did you know it was coming up?
Well, I did see someone put out like this cool little graphic video that kind of showed everyone, you know, from the beginning how their cash has been. So I kind of had an idea, but I didn't know that it was going to be done after Jonesboro. So that's cool that it happened with a big win like that.
And did you? I mean, when was the first time? I mean, you've been playing for a while now, but when was the first time you really thought to yourself, hey, I could make a decent living playing this game?
Well, when that happened, that feeling or that moment was 2010 Worlds. So I was still kind of just playing regionally, locally. Tried the tour in 2008 and 2009. Just wasn't really getting it together. So I went back to baseball. And then actually 2010 Worlds, I think 12th, or I was in the top 10 the majority of the time. And then I hadn't practiced disc golf or anything. It was all baseball. Went out there and played that one and took, you know, like I was saying, I was top 10 most of the time. And I was like, wow, if I really practice at this, this is something I could be really good at. So I took the baseball training over to disc golf, and it worked out well.
Yeah, it's been okay.
Yeah, I'd say so. Did you ever think that you'd pass someone like Climo? Like, is he someone that you looked up to throughout your career?
I wouldn't say looked up to, because I think what he had accomplished, whatever record Kenny has, you know, he's got quite a few of them. Just they seem untouchable. So I've never really looked at his numbers and be like, that's something I want to strive for. You know, everyone sees 12 world titles, like, I want 13, but is that realistic? It's hard to say. You know, it's such a different generation that he played in. You know, if you look at his tournaments, the majority of them seem to be in early in his career were in Florida. You know, that was that before the internet? I think it was before the internet. So to get to tournaments was, I don't know how they did it. You know, so that's a real question.
The magazine, right? Didn't they just print events in the back of the magazine? You'd like go through it and see what was close by.
Yeah, like so that might be at the disc golf
carrier,
news or something like that.
Carrier pigeons or something.
Carrier pigeons, exactly.
that's really interesting to find out. You know, the numbers that he put out there, they've always seemed untouchable. To break one like this, a career record for Kenny, is something that's unbelievable. And I just know that's something I'll continue to push for future generations.
And where does this one rank? I mean, obviously you've accomplished quite a bit in your career. Where does somebody like this rank in you know, the hierarchy of other accomplishments, along with world titles, US titles, things like that?
It's an interesting one because it's one that I couldn't really shoot for, because you never know what you're going to make at tournaments. My goal is to go to the big events, the biggest tournaments there are, and try to win those. So just by doing well in those, I know that money number is going to go up. So it was really hard to make this a goal. But if I knew I continued to play well at the big tournaments, it would eventually happen. So it's a great accomplishment, but nothing that I really set out to do.
So with this under your belt, what other accomplishments do you have to check off your list? Do you have a list?
I have things in mind.
Okay.
I want to have the most majors. You know, that's something fun to bring up, you know, with Tiger winning yesterday. So
of course,
on Sunday. So that is, I want to have the most majors out of anyone ever. It's hard to say world titles because that's one tournament to choose. I want all of them. So majors, and I think I already have most NTs ever. And then majors and just try to win every tournament that I play in. And anything I enter, I want to win.
Now we're talking about you at the top of the money list. So here's what I want to know. What is the most frivolous thing you've spent money on after you've won a tournament?
Well, early in my career, it's a funny story. Early in my career, when I was 17 is when I turned pro. So there was my first pro tournament was the Sunrise Showdown, or it was in Wrightwood, California. It was right after Am Worlds. I'd just taken second at Am Worlds. It was my first pro tournament. And Micah Dorius, he's a Southern California legend.
Yeah.
But he was the guy to beat that weekend. He was like 10-17 rated or 10-27, somewhere up there. And I was still, I think, sub 1,000. And there was a story that Micah said, there's no way this kid's going to beat me. And I went out and won that tournament by a few. So I went out and bought my first pair of Nikes that I bought by myself with Micah's money. Shoes were probably the thing back when I was younger that I would buy with my winnings. But now,
okay.
Nowadays it goes into adult bills like the house and car payments and insurance. So,
yeah, I guess that doesn't count as frivolous. Okay, if I'm looking right, that was in 2007, the Sunrise Showdown.
Yep.
And you won $500.
Oh, yeah.
You were rated 977. There you go.
Okay, so way under 1,000. What was he, 1017?
Yeah, 970. You shot a 993 and a 1045, and Micah at the time was 1030. Micah was 1030.
All right, there you go. Even better.
$500. How much of that 500 did those shoes cost?
Only like maybe less than 100.
Right. That's pretty reasonable.
That was a lot. I was 17.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I just turned 17, I think, too. Yeah.
So no gold chains or diamond earrings or anything in your future?
No, I have one gold chain. I got a nice gold cross. But that wasn't just one tournament.
Gotcha.
I had to work for that.
All right. So switching it up a little bit, talking about Jonesboro, you've placed 13th last year. And had a wonderful showing this year. What do you think was the biggest difference or adjustment that you made?
Biggest adjustment. Well, last year was my first time there. And I think I might've had some travel issues getting there and practicing the course and learning it as well as I would have liked. So that being a new place and all that stuff, I wasn't familiar with the area or the course or anything like that. So, this year I was a lot more comfortable, got there on time and I think I'm a lot more comfortable with my disc this year, than I was last year with my drivers.
Really?
It's weird to say, but I was very comfortable off the tees here. With all the weather, you know, we had the nice day on Friday. Then we had the shortened day Saturday, and then Sunday was windy and rainy, and then it was sunny again. So I was just really comfortable, you know, in all those conditions. And then that could be the comfort of knowing the area and the course, too. So I think that going off the tee was the biggest improvement.
You know what, you guys had to play, how many holes did you end up playing on Sunday? We figure it was like
33.
Okay. You know, I know that's not exactly something I'm sure you do that in practice rounds and stuff, but that course is pretty, you know, there's some elevation there and everything like that. Like, what was it like physically, you know, playing that much on Sunday? And do you feel like, did that give you any advantage? Like, do you feel like maybe endurance was a factor?
You know, it could have been. I think having to wake up at 7, or getting to the course by 7 for a lot of people, could have been an issue. And then teeing off again at 3:30. I mean, I could have honestly played another round there if I needed to. I didn't feel tired or fatigued at all. So But yeah, it definitely could have played in a factor in a lot of people's rounds. But no, I didn't feel any issues with it, any fatigue or being tired at all. Like I said, I could have played a third round if I needed to, and then I practice a lot in the mornings, afternoon, multiple times in the day, so that wouldn't have been an issue either.
So what, when it is a normal schedule and you guys are teeing off at like 3:30, what do you do all day? Because I'm thinking about myself, like Vanessa and I just laid around the hotel room for like 8 straight hours after our rounds. But I can't imagine doing that before your round. So what do you do to kill the time?
I really am not a fan of tee times that late. I mean, yeah. Even with baseball, I hated late games. But I've learned to adapt to them. I wish tournaments were like 2 o'clock at the latest. Like, you know, you get your day started at 9 or 10, have breakfast, take your time, get to the course by noon, then it's 2 o'clock. So that's what I wish. But I'm very fortunate with Hannah because she has to get up early for the Disc Golf Pro Tours. So I usually get up with her, wake up, and then I go back to sleep. so then I get like 2 hours of sleep, and then it's 11 o'clock, and then I can just start my day from there. So I'll watch like her 9 holes on U-Disc, and then I'm back asleep. So so it does work out in a weird way.
I was going to say, what's the touring situation like for you right now? I know you mentioned maybe you had some travel troubles getting to Jonesboro last year. I remember talking to you a couple times where it was like you were flying in and out of events more. You were Ubering to and from, things like that. Today you were driving when we caught up earlier. Like, are you kind of hitting the like proper hitting the road more, or are you still doing a lot of the fly in and out of town sort of thing this year?
It's pretty funny. I thought flying in and out would be so much easier, but it's actually harder because, you know, you have to wait for a flight. You fly out Monday, you lose a whole day. But if you drive, you kind of get there earlier because for Hannah and I, after Jonesboro, we checked out of our hotel Sunday morning, and then, or our Airbnb for there. But we checked out, had all our stuff at the course. And she finished earlier, so she was able to like go somewhere, change, get different clothes, and then come back out and watch. But we leave the tournament after Sunday, drive a few hours, get a hotel. Like, I think we drove until 1:30, until we basically got tired. We drove until 1:30, got in our hotel, and then just slept in and left at 12, then had 2.5 more hours, and we got here to the Quad Cities. Dropped our stuff off at our hotel room, and then went and practiced. So we went and played. So that's kind of – I'm actually really enjoying that because I don't feel fatigued. I don't feel tired, and I still got a great day of practice in, to where flying, you kind of got to go wait at the airport. It's a lot of waiting, sitting around, and then you miss a whole day, and then you have to deal to get a rental car. So it's actually a bigger headache than you'd think.
Have you contemplated going back to like the trailer RV style, or is that not fitting what you're doing?
Actually,
I know you have the dog at home and you guys have a house, yeah, and everything. Like,
we actually get our RV this weekend. So we have an RV.
Awesome.
Yeah. But we won't be getting that until this weekend. We were supposed to have it a little sooner. But unfortunately things happened. You know, you gotta make sure it's all checked out. There was one thing that had to get fixed. So we'll have it soon.
I know Sarah wants to probably know, are you bringing the dog out on tour?
That is the goal. That was a big part of it. Yeah. He's at home right now in Virginia, but it's just going to be Hannah, myself, and Harrison. So he'll be with us. We'll see how it goes first. We'll test it out with like a 2 or 3 week trip. And but he when he was a puppy, he loved traveling. He enjoyed it. So hopefully now that he's grown up a little bit more, he can enjoy it.
We talked a lot about him during our round on Sunday.
As good, my dog, yeah,
is freaking out next to me. Okay, so you, one of the strongest parts of your game right now is your putting, obviously. And this is more so for me. What do you think about when you're putting? Because I have these, like, I feel like I'm pretty mentally tough, and sometimes these dumb things just creep into my brain while I'm putting, and it just totally throws me off.
It's funny you say putting. Putting, I think is the thing that I have the least confidence in right now. So that's what I'm still working.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Stop it.
So that's the thing I'm still working the hardest on, but, it's weird. I feel like if I'm thinking about putting, if I'm thinking mechanicals, I'm missing. But if I'm thinking about the distance or what's the wind doing, I'll make it, you know. But once I start thinking about mechanical stuff is when I start having issues. So I try to focus more on how far am I, you know, putt through it, not to it, just like little weird things. And then if I have like a nice song or like a little catchy catchphrase in my head, that'll definitely help, because it prevents me from thinking about the mechanical side.
What can you think of one that was going through your head this past weekend?
There was just a song mainly. But like I just said, today Hannah was talking about putt through it, not to it. Like the chains are on the basket for a reason. Use them. Like don't try to just drop it in the basket. Hit the chains and let the chains slow the disc down for you.
Yeah.
So like that's an easy one to remember.
I like that.
So you're up at the Rumble this weekend. Is this your first time there?
No, I think this is like my third or fourth time. I've been here twice, and I think I've won it both times.
They're
courses that I'm familiar with.
Okay, so you feel that takes apart my question. I was going to ask if you're feeling pretty solid going on the weekend there. I don't know much about that tournament. I watched a little bit of Terry Miller's footage from last year, and the Westlake course at least looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, the Westlake course, I mean, it seems to be any course with water seems to be windy. So I remember it being really windy there. But one thing I do like about this year is with the new discs, I don't really reference back to a lot of shots. It's kind of like, let's go to this hole. You know, I remember that's the route, but now I have to figure out what I want to throw here. So it's making me, really think about being at the course and just going through the motions.
One more thing then, question that I want to close with. I don't know if Sarah has anything else, but I would like to know, when are we going to see another throw everything video? Because I enjoyed watching you guys go and search for random stuff to challenge each other with. But honestly, I think you guys could have gone a little more challenging.
Yeah. Once I get back to Virginia, I think we'll do something. I think they want to do something more like the In the Mind video, because a lot of people like that. I think because it had more, you know, it wasn't as silly. They got stuff out of it. But I do like doing the fun videos like the throw anything challenge. I think we'll keep it a little bit more so it can be competitive instead of me throwing a toilet around that goes.
Oh, come on. That was great.
Hilarious.
I'd rather
the
have
the best part is when, wait, did you throw it first or did the other guy throw it? Whoever threw it first thought that it was going to stay in the plastic and it just immediately like ripped out of the plastic.
He had a toilet seat cover.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he kept in the plastic. I had like a child learning seat. And the only issue was my first throw, I threw it and I got blood blisters across every of my fingers. Like if you look after I throw it, I look at my hand, I'm just like, oh gosh. So I switched my throwing style after that with that, because that wasn't the greatest feeling. So maybe we'll get something that can make it a little bit more competitive. We'll think about it a little bit more before we do something like that.
I was gonna say, what are some other challenges you guys to do? Could you do something that wouldn't be as strenuous on your could you do like an offhand challenge or something ridiculous like that?
Maybe something a little bit more athletic, like, you know, like maybe a baseball, football, hockey puck, javelin, I don't know.
Sign me up. I would love to see that. Awesome. Well, Sarah, do you have anything else?
I don't think so. I'm sure I'll think of something as soon as we let you go.
Sarah says hi to Harrison, your dog. And we both say hi to Hannah. And thank you for taking some time out. We'll see you pretty soon at GBO.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
All right. That was Paul Macbeth, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, Sarah, the big, I would say, I don't know, big story from Jonesboro has to be, well, there's a few of them, but let's talk about the weather first. You were there.
I was there.
The conditions were very poor.
Yeah.
Give us your take on the weather.
So the first day was fine. It was a little bit chilly, but totally fine. No one was wearing a ton of layers or anything. I would like to make, so I played with Cynthia. Let's see how, okay. So she said her last name is pronounced like Ricky Bobby, but Sinicati. I think I said it right. Sinicati. Ricky Bobby.
Ricciotti.
I mean, Ricciotti. Oh my gosh. Ricky. Can we cut that part out too?
I'll just start this whole segment
over. Oh my God, I suck. I'm not looking at her name right now, so I swear it started.
It's Ricciotti. I'll just start this whole segment. Ricky Bobby. That's fine. All right, Sarah. So one of the biggest stories, obviously, among many in Jonesboro was the weather. You were there. We had some issues, especially round two.
Yeah.
On the MPO side. But what was, you know, give me your weather. Give us your weather woman experience out there.
The first round was pretty mild. I went out there actually with four layers on and ended up just wearing like a short sleeve shirt. But the funny part for me, so I played two rounds with Cynthia Ricciotti, and she says her last name is like Ricky Bobby, but
I like it.
I know she's amazing. I love playing with her. But she's 16 years old, and she's out there in shorts and short sleeves for the first of 2 days. The first 2 days. But she was the only one. The second day, everyone was bundled up. It actually said on the weather report that we were supposed to get rain starting at, like, heavy rain starting at 9 a.m. And it was clear until, I think, about the 16th hole, and I was on the third card that day. So you'll see if you watch. I just finished watching the FPO round two coverage, and that's when the rain started coming down around hole 15, 16 for them. So, and those are the three hardest holes in the course. There's some water, there's lots of OBs, lots of elevation change, two par fours and a par five. So that's not when you went, when you want the rain to start coming down. And then the third day. So after that, for the men started, and apparently the lead card of men only got one hole in, and then they postponed the round.
Yeah. Correct? Yeah. They played one, and I think there was too much lightning, right? I mean, that's the only reason you stop something. Too much lightning, and then couldn't come back from it. And so adios to that round. And so then what they did is they then finished their round Sunday morning and still played round three. So like double dose of disc golf for most of the top men's players.
Yeah. So we were in the hotel room pretty much from the end of our round. We were considering going back out to watch the men, and the decision was made for us that we did not have to go back out, luckily. But it was pouring, like pouring rain, lightning, thunder all night. And the entire night. And we woke up and it was kind of just a light rain in the morning, but we knew the course conditions were going to be pretty bad. Just flooding of certain areas.
Slippery, sloppy.
Oh my gosh. And with all that elevation change and all the traipsing around that, you know, tons of people were doing on the course, it was, some of the footing was really, really bad. The tee pads were really good. They were the turf tee pads, and I don't have a problem with them in wet conditions, luckily. And it didn't seem like many other people did too, but yeah, mud was extreme.
Okay. So then obviously, I guess we haven't even mentioned yet, Paige Pierce and Katrina Allen kind of battled down the stretch. They were tied for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Were they tied? I'm trying to remember. Were they tied going into 18 or were they tied going into 17? They were tied going into 18.
They were tied going into 18, and Paige took the birdie and Katrina took the par.
Yeah. And it was mostly like, Kat kind of got off the fairway a little bit. That's really what I kind of noticed in this tournament, is when you get off the fairway, like the rough, at least it looked like the rough was fairly punishing in terms of footing, maybe not necessarily like your line, but just really hard to get good footing in. Would that be a correct assessment?
Yeah, I would. So I posted on social media after my practice round, or after round one, maybe, that I've played over 250 courses now in 35 or 34 states. And this is
humble brag.
I mean, I'm just saying, I've played a lot of courses, and this is one of my favorite courses I've ever played, easily in my top 10, maybe top five.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved it. I think it was extremely scoreable. Is that a word for the women?
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of birdies.
Well, yeah, I mean, you had a couple, you know, Paige shot five under the final round. Katrina shot under, like, 16 and 17 under.
Right.
Like the top. Okay, so the top, sorry to interrupt your thought here, but the top seven players were under par, yeah. And that doesn't happen that often.
No.
At these big events.
Yeah, so basically if you didn't get off the tee, I'm thinking like hole two, for instance, you're throwing, it's a par four, you're throwing around the corner over this really big branch. If you hit the branch or anything in that tunnel, there's no way you're going to be able to get out for the par. But if you get out and have a great shot, then you've got a good look at the circle for a three.
Right.
So everything is kind of like that. If you've got a solid tee shot that puts you right in the middle, then you're pretty well set up for at least the par.
And yeah, that's what I noticed too, especially like you saw the wind come up at some points, it looked like, and that would kind of affect, I noticed that affected Henna Blommers a little bit, mm-hmm. In during round two, especially couple shots turned over. Same with Kat, turned over a couple shots.
Yeah.
I don't know. Looking at the battle down the stretch between the two of them, you had Kat with a really hot stretch in the middle of the final round, four straight birdies, to kind of keep her in it. And that came after a double bogey. So really, really strong recovery.
Yeah.
From Katrina there. I think the biggest difference was putting. I mean, Kat two putted a couple times, so did Paige, but it was, she was just able to connect a little bit more from inside the circle than mm-hmm. Katrina. And I think that was really the biggest difference, right?
Yeah. I played with Katrina the first round. Her putting was really solid. I believe she shot 6 under the first round. Let me see. She shot 60. Yeah. So 6 under the first round, which is really solid.
Right.
It was our best day weather wise, but she looked really confident off the tee. Her putting looked good. She had a couple, looks like she had a couple bogeys that round, but I'm just looking, one of them was hole six, and that's that island hole that's kind of like deuce or die.
Yeah.
Unless you lay it up. I actually practiced the layup just with a putter off the tee when it was really windy during my practice round, and then throwing a mid-range over the island. And I didn't end up actually doing that during the event. I went for it all 3 days. But if you miss the island, the drop zone is on the tee side of the pond, and there's like, unless you have an awesome throw in, you're not gonna par that hole. So
right
it's not a super surprising bogey from her, but yeah,
I like that hole a lot. I think there's some really fun shots at that course. There's a couple of those little like late hyzers that kind of run together for me personally, but I think it's maybe different when you're on the ground,
yeah,
playing them. But I agree, it looks like a phenomenal place. Like that sweet like video board they had on hole one.
The digital board was awesome.
Yeah, like things like that. Like you can tell that Brad Peets and his staff have really put a lot into the event, which is just it's great to see an event like that grow. I mean, it started out as a little B tier, and now it's an A tier on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, and it just keeps getting bigger and better.
As far as amenities go, they had porta potties everywhere, water everywhere, and then there was a Jonesboro area, like SPCA type
Humane
Society that was there. And they were actually collecting, I think, $5 fee for spectators. And then I believe she said that 40% of everything was going to their organization. So that was
nice.
That was super cool for me. I was like, wow, that's just kind of going above and beyond for your community as well.
Yeah, for sure. We talked about Paige and Katrina, a little bit of a battle at the end, but and this isn't to take away from them, but we talk about them all the time. I want to talk about Henna Blommers because she's awesome. And we need to start the totally unofficial PDGA radio GoFundMe to get her to like come over here. Dude, she is really, really good to watch.
She's
like,
really good.
She throws a mile like the first hole, I think, of round two, when they were talking about how she basically threw a Firebird and parked it, and it's a 300. I mean, granted, it's kind of downhill, but
yeah,
I mean, she's,
it's like
a
uphill and then down. It's a weird hole. It's like uphill and then downhill. It plays all of, I would say it plays like 350, like pretty close to what it is.
Right.
So, yeah.
And so, like, I mean, I take that back. They were mentioning on the coverage that she was throwing like a Firebird. She's throwing a Pro Discus Titan, which is very similar in design.
And overstable fairway driver.
Overstable, like not 9, 10 speed. And she just parked it. And like her putting is super smooth. Like she hit some really long putts.
Yeah.
Just really in control and smooth power. Like just a lot of fun to watch. And to see her come over here and, you know, keep up with the women who are playing at the top of the lead card and on camera like every week in her first big event over here was pretty impressive. I mean, I know a couple holes got her really. I gotta go look it up. I can't remember. Was it 18?
Hole 18, I believe she took an 8 the first day. Yeah.
Yeah, so she took an 8 the first day and then a 6 the next day, and then she finally parted the final day. So she really, really struggled with that. And honestly, like you take away that 8 and just and the 6 and just give her a par for that hole, and she's up there winning, I think.
Yeah.
I think she only lost by 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But I mean, looking at her numbers, 3rd in parked, 2nd in both circle 1 and circle 2 in regulation, 2nd in fairway hits, 1st in birdie percentage. I don't know. You probably didn't get to see much of her because you were, you know, playing at the same time.
I watched the second round just right before we started doing the podcast. But yeah, Paige Pierce was talking about how they were joking and she was saying, oh, do you ever throw forehand? And she was like, ha ha ha, no. No. Just like not even a thought crossed her mind. So yeah. she really knows how to work a putter. Little Anheuser shot. Her mid-range game is really good. And yeah, it would be really cool if she was over here competing with some of the big.
I mean, Alice, she's pretty young, right? Isn't she only like 17 or 18?
19, yeah.
She's 19. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, well, we'll get to see her at the European Open at least.
Yeah.
That's the next event on her schedule. She actually doesn't have anything else on her schedule right now, but
yeah,
it's pretty early in the year for Europe.
And this was her first event of the year too.
Yeah.
It says even more about her that she just got off of her off season and was playing this well. I'm super impressed.
She's played 60 career events and has won 31 of them. That's silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm a big fan.
Me too.
I'm a big fan. If some listener out there wants to start a Hannah Blommers GoFundMe, I can't officially endorse it.
Can we do Evelina and Henna?
Yeah. Just kill for them.
Joint GoFundMe account. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be great. Get them both to come over here for Worlds and see what they can do, because I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk before we get into your kind of experience a little bit, Sarah, let's talk about more on the MPO side. Obviously Paul Macbeth did Paul Macbeth things and really just that dude, when he starts putting the way it is, I think I mentioned this on the show the other week, but like he has that putting look right now of like, was it 2015 Worlds in Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Is that when Worlds was in Pittsburgh? Mm-hmm. When he like 45 and in, he was dead on. And like, that's how he's putting right now. And I'm sorry, I don't know who's going to be able to beat him when he's putting like this.
Yeah, he looks super confident.
And it's just, it's scary.
So I watched, or mostly listened to all of the 3rd MPO round on my drive home yesterday. And that was the biggest difference, obviously, between his round and Garrett Gerthy's round. Garrett.
And that's, yeah.
He and actually Kevin Jones were having a lot of trouble on
Kevin really struggled on the green yesterday. Yeah.
And Garrett knows, like, this is not, I'm sure he knows, it's a consistent thing across the board that he gets to the dance floor, but then can't convert the dance moves. I don't know how to say that, but man, it was really fun to watch him a couple rounds though. Just,
well, I mean, this course is just made for him, right? Yeah. Like he played well there last year. Same with Kevin Jones. I mean, this is a thrower's course for the most part, right? But at the same time, like if you're throwing it and you're getting it to 40 instead of 15 or 20, that makes a big difference.
Definitely. Yeah. I was really happy to see Chris Dickerson get up to the lead card the 3rd round. That was cool. So he was 5 back of Macbeth. And he had a super clean round too. He had no bogeys.
Yeah.
3rd round.
Yeah, it's good to get him out there. I mean, and even like I thought it was great. Like, this is, you know, I know he didn't, we're not talking about him in terms of being on like lead cards or anything, but like, you know, Will Schusterick was back playing this week and he came in, what, 25th, I think, which, you know, a little bit of a drop on the final day, but that was his first event of the year. We haven't seen him doing as much lately. Yeah. So, you know, good to see him getting back in the swing of things, not too far from, you know, kind of like you getting out there, because it wasn't too far from,
yeah,
from Tennessee, right?
Yep. And Keith also staying up there. He looks like he dropped one spot the last round, but I actually got to introduce myself during my practice round. Everyone that we've interviewed or kind of talked about a lot on the podcast, I try to make sure I go up and I'm like, hey,
oh, nice.
I'm the person that you've talked to. oh, and I actually did talk to Henna and was like, hey, have you ever listened to our podcast? And she was like, no.
No, but who are you?
First step is to listen to our podcast. But I'm hoping that she and Evelina might come on if maybe we give them the questions beforehand.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
But anyway,
we'll have them at some point.
Yeah.
So I mean, just looking at the men's field and having, for most of them, having to play almost two rounds on Sunday. I know it doesn't sound like a lot because that's what people will do on, you know, your recreational times, but I mean, how long is this course in number of feet total? Let me see here. It's just under 10,000.
Okay.
So I mean, that's a haul if you're playing two rounds on that thing.
Yes.
You're walking, you're doing some walking and some elevation and everything. So endurance, a big factor, mm-hmm. I think, you know.
Mud.
Yeah. So in I'm looking to just kind of see what really, obviously we know Paul Macbeth putted well. His last bogey was hole three of round two. So actually, he didn't bogey at all, I don't think, on Sunday. Because if I recall correctly, I think he got through about hole three on Saturday.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
So he went bogey free for however many holes he played, 18 and 15, 33 holes.
In those conditions as...
on Sunday.
Stupid impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, so watching the coverage, the live coverage yesterday, the sun kind of broke and it got a little bit warmer for the men. So I think the conditions in the afternoon were a little bit better.
They looked a little better.
Still really windy. I mean, a lot of those flags are like whipping around on top of the baskets.
Yeah.
Not optimal.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
What's my pick? Two-time champion Richard Wysocki struggled a bit, Sarah, this week. He did have to dig out of a bit of a hole. It looked like his first round really was rough. He came out round one and was only three under par. Double bogey on 13, which is just one of those kind of little hyzer shots we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if he rolled away or something. Couple OBs. A little bit of an inconsistent performance for Ricky. I was kind of expecting to see him play a little bit better at that course.
Yeah, me too.
Anything else really jumping out at you? I think you, I don't think you've done all the calculations, but you probably cleaned up in the picks, right?
No.
No? Did I?
Yes. You got Sweet. 2 points for Paige.
Oh, that's right.
You got 1 point for Rebecca Cox being in the top five.
Yeah, by the way, we did not talk about her at all.
She's playing so clean.
She's killing it.
Her putting is amazing from inside and outside the circle. Circle one.
She hit some really nice long putts, and she just, I think like she's just really good off the tee in terms of control. Like, she may not be throwing quite as far as Kat and Paige, but her control is usually pretty dialed in, it looks like.
Yeah. Oh, I also want to give a shout out to, so Vanessa and I stayed together and she had food poisoning the entire weekend and still managed to finish tied for fifth with Jessica Weiss at four.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
She shot a 975 rated round, her second round. So I asked her if she was okay with me telling everyone that she had food poisoning. She said it was. So
I don't know if that's food. 3 day food. I think she was just sick, man.
I mean, you never had the last time,
like 3 days.
The last time I had food poisoning, it lasted a week, and I had to go to the hospital. So yes, don't eat at Fazoli's in Jonesboro.
I think you just had sick. Oh gosh.
Yeah, a couple other people also had some.
That's a bummer.
Some issues, but super proud of her. Yeah. Okay, back to the pick. So you got 1 point for Rebecca Cox. You got 1 point for Macbeth being in the top five, obviously.
Oh, I picked him. I thought you did.
No. And I got zero, a whopping 0 points.
You got 0 points?
Yeah, I picked Cat to win, Cat and Eagle to win, so I got zero. And I picked Hokum and Heimberg for top five.
Oh, man.
So now
Sweet.
We're tied up at 13 points.
Yes. Going into GBO week. I like
Not
it. I feel
long.
Good about that.
I get the first picks for GBO. So
it's okay. You need them clearly. all right. Let's take a look then. Anything else? Oh, real quick. You kind of listened to the broadcast on the way home. I tried to watch it at some points this weekend. It was a pretty busy weekend. I've been trying to kind of catch up on some of the post-produced stuff. By the way, if you do want to see anything post-produced from the Pro Tour this weekend, it's on Smashbox's channel, their YouTube channel. I think there was maybe a little bit of confusion about that. One of the things about the live feed, it was over on DGPT.TV, and they had some problems early, I think, like round one with too many people hitting the server. They got that fixed. They improved. They made some tweaks throughout the tournament, so that was good. What I'm hoping that they can maybe fix is right now the way the stream works on their page is that if you come in late, that's where you start. Whereas like on YouTube, when you're watching on Smashbox, let's say I came in at a half hour into the live stream, I could go back to the beginning of the live stream.
Yeah.
And watch it. On this one, you couldn't. So that was kind of a bummer. But I get it. It's live sports. They want you to tune in. But it was nice having Johnny V back on the controls. I thought most of the stuff looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got a few more weeks to see now. The next Pro Tour is San Francisco. There'll be some more post-production stuff going on there. So
I kind
it's
of,
good.
I miss it being on YouTube because I didn't know there were issues with the feed. I thought because I was in the hotel, it was just bad hotel internet,
right,
or something. And so we kept refreshing it and just couldn't watch it. So, but if it was on YouTube and the comments were up, people would have been commenting like, oh, is this happening with anyone else?
Yeah. And that is something that you miss a little bit, I think, from YouTube. And so hopefully there's some things that they can maybe implement. Maybe they can get a chat feature over on the DGPT site. You know, but hopefully, gosh, now that we know Smashbox is back, I think actually I have to say again, thank you, Steve Dodge, for announcing the big news right after we record the podcast last week, because we didn't get to talk there. They're letting post-production teams, like proper post-production teams, come back now. So really, I hope that with all this, that when we're talking about the media stuff, that it's like this really cool shot got hit or you know, recorded or, you know, we're just talking about the players and how well they're doing.
Yeah,
I think we can hopefully be focused more on that stuff. So with that further ado, Sarah, hot rounds from the weekend. Why don't you start us off?
Yes.
Most of them from Jonesboro.
Yes. I only have one that was not from Jonesboro. So
all right.
The fifth hottest round. So I don't know, but this seems like the hottest list of hot rounds I have ever had on the FPO side, which is pretty cool. The fifth hottest round was Sophie. You want to help me out with her last name?
I'm going to say Bjorlico.
Bjorlico? Okay.
Bjorlick? I think it's Bjorlick. Maybe it's Bjorlick.
Okay. She played the Ale Gull Open. Does that sound right?
Okay.
And that was in Ale, Sweden. She shot a 991. Actually, she shot a 990 and then a 990 following up with a 991.
Wow.
That event. And she won that event by 22 strokes.
That's cool.
In a field of six women. So very cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Very, very cool. And the rest are from the Jonesboro Open. The fourth hottest rated round was Jessica Wee. She shot a 993, her third round, and she ended up tied for fifth. The next was Katrina Allen. She shot 1,000 on the dot, unofficial. Hopefully it'll go up. And she shot that her second round, and she ended up second place. Rebecca Cox also shot a 1,000 rated round, her second round, and she ended in fourth place.
Wow.
Next was Christina Lithicum, and she shot really freaking good. She finished in seventh place. She shot a
lefty power.
Yeah. She kind of had a roller coaster like I did, not as bad of a roll. Like she had a roller coaster, but on the better end of the roller coaster than I did.
She enjoyed the ride more than you did.
We never got to play together, but she went 960, 900. A 1,001. So that's pretty good.
I believe that's her first career 1,000 rated round.
Yeah. And she's a lefty.
Congrats to her on that. So, yes.
Yeah. And
what are you trying to say? Lefties can't shoot.
No, I'm just saying lefties unite. I'm just pointing it out.
With my left hand. Power,
right? Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that is by the way, that is the highest rated round of her career by a good amount.
Awesome.
Her highest rated round before was a 979.
And that's really impressive, especially on this course in those conditions, that third round, because I was commenting to someone how righty friendly this course was. So to be able to kill the course like that is awesome. But she finished in seventh place at a total of 3 down. Congratulations.
Nice.
And then the hottest rated round, it was a tie between Henna and Paige Pierce. They shot 1,008. Henna shot it during her second round and Paige Pierce during her third round. So congratulations.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. On the men's side, they all came from Jonesboro, coming in with a 1058. During which round? I'm trying to find him now on the list. Oh, it was his opening round. Simon Lizotte, he was the fifth highest rated round with a 1058, and he actually came in seventh place this weekend. Very nice. Fourth hottest rated round from both Eagle McMahon and Ricky Wysocki. They shot 1063s. Eagle came in fourth. Ricky came in a ninth place tie with Matt Oram. Looks like both those 1063s were their final rounds. Double G, Garrett Gerthy, and Kevin Jones, a couple big bombers, both going with 1065s. That was in the opening round. And Double G came in second place. Kevin Jones struggled a little bit, like we talked about on Sunday, and dropped down to eighth place. Paul Ulibarri and Emerson Keith both shot 1073 rated, opening rounds as well. Ulibarri came in a tie for fourth, and Emerson Keith came in sixth place. And Paul McBeth's 1084 rated final round helped him to the win and the hottest round of the week. Pretty good stuff. Also, shout out to PGA Board of Directors member Trevor Harbolt, came in 12th place with a 11 under par showing for the weekend. Pretty solid. Like,
yeah.
You look down at the list and he's 992 rated. He is the only person in the top, well, no. Only three people in the top 25 were rated under 1,000. He
awesome.
Was the highest at 12th place. So
super cool.
Shout out there. And also shout out to my dad, who won an event this weekend as well. Although I don't believe it was sanctioned.
Yeah, but still counts.
Got to give him a shout out anyway.
That's cool.
Because he won his division. So yeah. All right, Sarah, let's take a break. We'll talk to Nate Heinold about some pro world stuff, because I know it's a ways away still, but it's really not. And then we'll wrap up the show. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. Welcome back to the show. And joining us now is the tournament director of this year's PGA Professional Disc Golf World Championships in Peoria, Illinois, Nate Heinold. Nate, thanks for taking some time out. Big stuff coming for Worlds. We have registration opening when, sir?
Oh, boy. That is a fantastic question. Let's see how fast I can.
It's Friday, Nate. It's Friday. It's coming this week. That's why we're talking to you, man. I love it.
Oh, duh. That's why I have Disc Golf Scene, to tell me when stuff opens. So that makes sense. So
that is a very subtle plug. I like that.
but yes, you're right. April 19th for Tier 1 invites, which probably means the best players in the world. And then May 3rd for other people. And then May 24th if you're not quite as good as Tier 2. And then on.
So I'll be sure to sign up never. And, but I'm excited to come there and do all of the non-disc golfing this year.
Yeah. I actually got an invite to play. So I messaged the PDJ and said, do I get to play as well? And the answer is no. So
yeah, it's probably frowned upon, but that's okay. It just means another spot for someone else. We are excited to come to Peoria this year, and that's why we're having you on the show, man. So let's talk. There's a lot of big stuff coming up. First and foremost, let's talk, payout. I know you are known for running the Ledgestone Insurance Open, which generally does pretty well on the payout side of things. So what do you have in store for Worlds this year?
Yeah, we wanted to do even bigger things than I've done in the past. We weren't able to quite take it all the way past what we did in 2015 for added cash, but the purse is still going to be bigger than what we did in 2015. We're going to It looks like we're going to have $60,000 of added cash.
Awesome.
For maybe a total purse of $135,000-ish. And so that's just going to be great for our players. The other big thing we're doing is 45% of the field will get paid instead of the usual 40%. So that's something that I pushed for with the PDJ, and that's something that I've always done with Ledgestone. Most big tournaments, actually every pro tour event, and I think every national tour does 40%, but I kind of wanted to get us closer to that 50% number.
Very nice, man. Well, I mean, you know, what kind of efforts are you having to undertake? Like from a fundraising standpoint, are you pounding the pavement all day, every day to get this kind of added cash? Like maybe for the tournament directors who might be listening, what's your secret?
Yeah, we get, I mean, I spend way too much time on Ledgestone and Worlds and disc golf in general, in terms of those two events and the new course work that we're doing at Northwood and me being on the board. I probably spend half of my time working on disc golf and the other half on insurance, and the disc golf stuff doesn't really pay the bills. So, so I really spend a lot of time trying to get sponsors. I go for bigger sponsors, so I don't really try to go for any whole sponsors, small stuff. Those just come to me automatically through emails and messages. So I'm focusing on sponsors above $2,500. So making some bigger phone calls and pitches. And if I'm going after a big sponsor, I put together a 10-page PowerPoint that kind of goes over the benefits and how many views we have and all that kind of great stuff. And, you know, we get a lot of our funding as well from tourism committees in the area. And so I just finished my last tourism city council presentation, and that's a 4-month process. And because we have 4 different communities that support the event, and I have 2 tournaments this year, so I've had 8 presentations to basically do for Worlds and Ledgestone. And so that right there gets $25,000 to $35,000 as well.
Wow.
So
okay.
For each event. So.
So moral of the story, go to support your local municipalities and tourism bureaus.
Correct. Especially they like you when you bring outside visitors to town, which is what Ledgestone does. 90% of our players come from out of town. And with Worlds, it'll be, I mean, for Worlds, we're going to have like 3 locals play the event. Everybody right. else is out of town. So
yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned some of the course work going on at Northwood. I think that's obviously, so for people who don't know, we have the Lake Eureka temporary course, and we'll be mostly where, well, I think three MPO rounds there, right? And then 3 FPO rounds over at Sunset, the golf course. And then the other 2 rounds for each division will be played at Northwood. And when was the last time Northwood was played by MPO or FPO for Ledgestone?
It was actually more recent than you would think. I believe it was, we definitely used it in 2015.
Okay.
We used it in 2016 for MPO, and FPO used it last year, actually in 2018. So,
okay. But so, it has taken under some significant changes since then, right? What's been going on with that?
Yeah, we built the course originally in 2002, 2004 range, and we redesigned it in 2012. I say we, I'm not me, but the designer. And then when we got the bid for Worlds, I went to the park district and the course designer and said, I have this grand idea to have a gold layout here. And I pitched them the idea, and it included like combining some holes. And they kind of looked at me and said, okay, great. The problem is you just counted 13 holes. And I said, yeah, I want you guys to build 5 new holes in the woods. And I want them to be, I want 1,000-foot par 5, and I want all kinds of great stuff. And so we spent the last 18 months undergoing that massive transformation. Wow. To build a true gold championship level course for MPO. And for FPO, it will, you know, it will be a blue level course, because if they were playing the gold track, they probably would want to kill me. So, so we do have some more appropriate tees for them, even though it will still be well over 7,500 feet for them. It would be very challenging for the women still.
And then how are you kind of testing that one out? Like battle testing it in terms of making sure it's Worlds ready. Are there other, are there other events beforehand that are going to get to really try that one out?
Yeah, the course won't feel new at all. We kind of finished the preliminary changes last October, and I hosted a B tier immediately. And then this winter, our winter lasted for 5 months of snow and rain. In fact, it just snowed 5 inches here 2 days ago, but it's 77 right now. So imagine that. But we hosted a B tier in October. We had our annual triples event 3 days ago. We had 105 players. We're going to make a few tweaks based on that, very minor. We have another B tier coming up there, Northwood Gold Worlds Preview, May 11th. We're hosting a Memorial Day tournament there. And then MA1 will play Northwood Gold for Ledgestone. So we have a ton of playing tournament opportunities. And we've already used some of those stats to make a couple small tweaks with a couple trees. But the course right now is 99% ready for Worlds.
Very nice. And then, you know, speaking of Worlds and Ledgestone, obviously you are running both of those this year. Ledgestone's what, in June, and then Worlds is in August. So you're going to give yourself a couple months in between. But I mean, what, why? you got to be a little bit crazy, right? So what's going into all of the efforts this year?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that when I asked my wife if I could run Worlds or bid on Worlds, she asked if he'd be less work. And I said yes, because I was obviously lying. So yeah, there's no real good reason why. I like to say that I didn't want to break up Ledgestone and just have a 2 year gap. I kind of wanted to keep it continuous. And that's a pretty lame reason. It's more of just I just like disc golf, I guess, that much to where I wanted to subject myself to that much torture and work for the full year. But I think it's really just I really do love my Ledgestone tournament, and I didn't want to not have the AMs have an opportunity to play it. And so I kind of wanted to keep it going. So
gotcha. Now, I mean, what else can people look forward to with Worlds this year? Obviously, besides the competition and the payout, what are you most excited about in addition?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about Worlds, you think about, you know, if it's just pro Worlds, you really think about the media and the competition. But we're trying to do a couple of fun side events. We have, on Sunday night, we're going to have a little, disc golf night at the ballpark where we'll have some players on the field throwing before the minor league game. We'll have an ice cream social. We have a couple fly marts. But I've spent most of my time on fundraising and everything else on the courses. And so we're really focused on making sure the competition, which are the courses, are ready. And then the payout is as good as it gets. And then obviously I've been working with actually you on the media stuff. And so we do have some fun side events, but my main goal is making it spectator friendly and making the competition amazing. And so this year, you know, we're doing a spectator badge, to where we're charging for parking and they're getting some benefits. So just to kind of give more of that back to the players.
Very nice. And then, last thing, obviously we have sponsors that are supporting this thing. What's, title sponsorship with Infinite Discs and then, some other big contributors, right?
Yeah. Infinite's the presenting sponsor. I always like to say the PDGA is the title sponsor.
That's right. Yes.
Because they show up first in the name, but yeah, Infinite's, our presenting sponsor, Discraft, DGA, and Prodigy are the core sponsors. Innova is a big sponsor. MVP, Zanfell, Keen, Grip 6 was just announced. So we have a lot of great sponsors. And then we have several great communities, the Village of Morton, the City of Peoria, Enjoy Peoria, the City of Eureka, and the City of Pekin. So there are a lot of people that help make the event happen for sure.
Well, it's going to be a great time. I'm excited for us to get out there. It's, I'm sure, as much as it seems ridiculous that we're talking about this now in April, August is going to get here in a flash. So, Nate, thanks for taking some time out to talk about Worlds. It's going to be starting. The competition itself starts on Tuesday, August 13th, and that is in Peoria, Illinois. Nate Heinold, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, Sarah, you are going to be at Pro Worlds this year, correct?
That is a fact.
All right. Maybe we should do a live show from Pro Worlds.
I feel like we considered doing that last year, and then we just didn't.
Did we chicken out?
Maybe. Like live show with video or audio? I guess if it's going to be live, it has to be video.
No, I mean, you can do a live radio show. Plenty of places do live radio shows.
Are we going to have a live audience with clapping and a laugh track? Like a plot? Like
does anybody? Well, that's the thing. Like, does anybody want to come and watch us podcast? I don't know. I guess we'd have to see. If you want to watch us come, if you want to watch us podcast, you know, live. Tell us. Let us know.
I would like
at
to vote.
Radio at PDGA.
I don't even know why I said that because I hate public speaking, which is the reason I like podcasting, is because up until like 3 weeks ago, you and I weren't even looking at each other.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Now we have software where we get to look at each other and
make faces.
Make faces. Also, however, if you don't want to do a live show because you're scared of public speaking, we're definitely doing a live show now. So we'll figure out how to make the logistics of that one work.
I'll drink I'll drink lots of coffee.
I like that. I'm all for coffee. Also, as far as radio at pdga.com, please send your questions for the PDGA Pro panel at the GBO next week. You could win a DGA basket. That would be pretty sweet. Then you could get better at putting, because putting is how you win.
See,
just ask Paul Macbeth.
I feel like I should be able to enter this contest now.
Do you need to get better at putting? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, we didn't talk about my showing at
That's right, we haven't. Do you want to or not?
Yeah.
We don't have to.
I would like to get it off my chest a little bit.
Let's exercise some demons.
Okay. So first round, I had an amazing card. It was Vanessa and Katrina and Cynthia Riccati. Now I can't even
think. Riccati.
Ricky Bobby. And yeah, it was super good vibes. We're all friends. It was the first time I played with Cynthia, but she was super cool. And we all shot really well. And Katrina, I think Katrina ended up on lead card, obviously. Vanessa on second card. And then Cynthia and I on third card. So I was like, well, that was successful. We all played really well.
Yeah.
The downside is that I only got to play one practice round because I have
life
to work.
Because of life.
Yeah, I got to Jonesboro Wednesday night and then I worked all day Thursday, so I didn't have to take another day of PTO. And then I played a super quick practice round and I was like, all right, I sort of get, you know, the jive of these holes, but I was not as good at figuring out where all the OB was, for instance, or practicing. If I were to go out of bounds, let me see what this drop zone shot would look like. So those are the things I did not have time for before it got dark and raining. So the first round, I was like, oh, that actually ended up being really well. And I was super excited about it. And it was rated 944, I believe. And then the second round, I made two circle two putts, I think on holes 2 and 3. I was just like feeling it. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. And then I ruined my round on holes 16, 17, and 18.
16 is nasty.
16 is terrible. So, yeah.
Is that your new nemesis hole?
Yes. I think I took a 4 the first day. The second day I took a 6. And then wait for it. So those three rounds. So I was par going into those three holes.
Okay.
And ended up shooting +5 because of those three holes. So I was very upset and just not happy because I felt like I had like a lot of mental fortitude. And even though the weather was bad, I was still playing pretty well, blah, blah, blah. So I dropped from, I was tied for 10th and I dropped to tie for 15th. And then the weather was really bad. So this is where maybe my first round was like, I don't want to say lucky because I obviously had the skill to execute all of the shots, but lucky in the way that I didn't get into those OB areas or like didn't hit a tree and then knock myself into some OB area because of not knowing exactly where to land because I didn't practice the course or something. The third day I actually shot the best, front nine of anyone on my card. And then it just went super downhill from there. And for some reason, I just lost all confidence in the putting green. And normally my in the circle putts are super solid and my circle two putts were pretty good. And I just couldn't make anything. And I don't know what it was. It was crazy. And then I get to hole 16 and I was just not feeling confident at all. And I end up So you basically have to, most of the women took a mid-range or a putter and threw an approach shot. And then if you don't get into the perfect landing spot to throw over the water, you have to throw another approach shot with a putter.
To get back to the middle of the fairway, yeah. Essentially, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I did that. And not knowing exactly where the best landing spot was, because I didn't know the course as well as I should have, I put myself under this low-hanging branch. And with these giant thorns that were like 3 inches long. And I try to throw my shot over the water, and it goes in the water. So then I'm throwing from the drop zone, which, again, I didn't practice. I try to throw a mid-range over the drop zone because I'm not sure really what the distance is because I didn't practice it. And I throw that in the water. And then I throw another shot thinking it was over. It was on land, but way right. And all of us thought it was in bounds because a bunch of other people had shot over there too. We get all the way around to that side, and two of us were out of bounds over there too. So at this point, I'm throwing my third shot from the drop zone.
So you had to go to the drop zone again on that.
Yeah,
one.
So I had to walk all the way back.
You landed, yeah, okay, geez.
I had to walk all the way back. The other card behind us, like, Madison and a couple other people are up there like waiting to throw, and I'm like, sorry guys, gotta throw my 15th shot. And I throw over the water, and I ended up making a big putt to save my 10. So at that point, yikes. I know 16 and 17 are like not gimme holes at all, and at this point I'm just totally just
demoralized. Yeah.
And I try to hold together, and I don't cry on the course. I actually didn't cry at all yesterday. I was very surprised, but I just got very upset, and I was very talkative and like happy and jovial the entire round, and just got very silent. And then was like, all right, just hold it together for two holes. You can do this. You can do this. And 16, I did something stupid, blah, blah, blah. I took a bogey, double bogey.
And 17?
17.
Yeah. Double.
Yeah. Double bogey. And then 18, it was I got off the tee, I got up in the fairway, and I throw this shot over to the right that I think is like perfectly in the circle, but it was a little bit right, and it was out of bounds because I didn't know that there was out of bounds over there because nobody on my two cards before that had gone out of bounds right. Outside of circle two, and I just didn't know it was over there. So I put my shot just too far right, and whoops. So... moral of the story is, like, I...
Get there earlier and practice.
But I have a job. So what I was telling people is that I can either play a whole bunch of big events like this and take one day off for practice or a half day off for practice, or I could play, like, one or two of these big events and take a week off to practice. So it really stinks because I want to play as many big events as possible, but I was not mentally prepared... or as far as the caddy guide went, prepared to throw these holes the best that I could.
Well, look, here's the silver lining, Sarah. It's going to make for a really good revenge story when you go back next year.
I'm really excited because now I feel like I know the course. I've had four rounds on it in terrible conditions mostly. And I think I got all of the stupid things out of my system. And Kat and I were messaging afterward, and I was just like, man, I know I have the skill and the potential. You know, do you have any tips for consistency? And she gave me some tips that I plan on executing. So
good.
We will see.
All right.
I feel better. Thank you.
Hey, that's what we're here for. I'm sorry that you had a rough time. If it makes you feel any better, I would probably get like a 12 on that.
Maybe not. You might get beginner's luck and take a four like I did the first day.
We need to go, like, maybe we need to go play around together when we're at Worlds and, like, see how I would stack up.
I would be pretty demoralized if you beat me, though. Because you don't even have a rating yet. I have no idea.
I don't either, honestly. It's got to be lower than yours. Like, come on. I don't get to play that much anymore. I went out and played last week, and it was ugly. And so I just need to take a break. Come back and
challenge me.
There we go. We'll go play. I'm sure we're going to Worlds. What we should do is really we should just go and punish ourselves over at the Lake Eureka course and see how many frisbees we can lose. I'm just kidding. That sounds awful.
Well, speaking of that, I lost two of my beloved turns in the water. But shout out to Innova. Thankfully, I'm sponsored and I put in another disc order today.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
Nice. So. Nice. All right. Well, hey, there's always next year.
Yeah.
And we will look for you to improve at Jonesboro next year.
I hope so.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for our show this week. Sarah, thank you for sharing all of your experiences. It's cool. I love it when you're able to get out to an event and like talk about it first.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. I'm excited for me to get out to GBO and see that one firsthand. It's going to be good. Hit us up with your feedback at radio@pdga.com. Send us those pro panel questions. Subscribe to the show. Share it with your friends and your mom and your uncle and your cousin and people who don't even know what disc golf is. Get more people to like disc golf.
Yeah. Right?
All right. So until then, that was PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill for Sarah Lamerson. Thanks for listening and be good to each other. We will catch you next week.